Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Swung out and belted to deep right, away, back and gone. Coco Crisp, a no doubt about it, two-run blast to right. Swung on, hit high in the air to deep right field. Back goes Martinez on the track, at the wall, it is gone. Roberto Perez with an opposite field home run to right. And the Indians get a mammoth insurance run as Allen tries to finish it off. The 0-2 pitch. A swing and a miss. Ball game. And once again, Cleveland, you will have an October to remember. The Indians, for the eighth time, American League Central Division champs, their first division title in 9 years, and the mobbing goes on out at short.
I want them to blow it out. It's so hard to get to do one of these things that they deserve every minute of it. And I want them to celebrate. They should be so proud of what they did. It's hard, and it's a lot that goes into trying to even just, you know, win a division. Certainly the season's all over, but they deserve every minute of joy they have.
You know, this is awesome. This is exactly where you want to be at the start of the season, celebrating with some champagne with all your buddies. This is awesome. It's not just a one game and go home. Now we get to stay there, get our feet wet, and we're not just happy to be there. We're coming for some people.
Seeing the smiles on my teammates' faces and hearing the roar of our fans, that's the main thing. You know, being able to see my teammates get their ring, to see, you know, how much when you put in a lot of hard work, this is the benefit of it. And then seeing the smiles on the team's faces, I mean, on my fans' faces when they just see that moment happen.
There's more things to accomplish. There's more things to go through. There's more things to experience. And then now you just refocus, reprioritize, and go at it again.
Well, with Mo Williams retiring, you know, with us losing Dele, you know, I think it's important to, you know, find who's going to play that backup point guard, you know, and, you know, we might have to do it by committee. You know, Kay's coming along, Kay Felder. We can play Shumpert some backup point with LeBron on the floor with him, you know, Jordan McRae. So we're going to have to do it by committee until we figure out, you know, what's the best, you know, thing for this team.
J.R. Smith is not here today. As we've stated and coaches previously stated, we think very highly of J.R. We love him as a member of our team, and for that reason, we've made an incredibly competitive and aggressive offer to re-sign him. We hope that gets done in very short order. In a very late developing move, Mo Williams' agent reached out to me this morning and informed me that Mo is not going to continue his playing career.
This isn't a continuation of last year. We don't start at 44 wins and the eighth seed in the playoffs and try to climb. You start at 0 wins and no guarantee of anything and try to work your way back up as high as you can go. And so, yeah, you start with the basics, you know, and you start for us, you know, with those things on the wall and try to teach those things. They should be able to do things and pick up things a lot quicker because we got a lot of guys back, but you still can't skip those steps. Now, why not us? Why does there have to be a ceiling on us? Why can't we be that team and contender? So, you know, that's my outlook on it, and I certainly think guys have high expectations.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
All right, on we go. It is a championship a championship year for the city of Cleveland. And even here in Toledo, we have got to celebrate a world championship by the Cavaliers and now a Central Division championship for the Cleveland Indians. And you know what, Jim Cushman, we need to relive that final out one more time before we bring on our first guest.
I have no problem with that.
Now the Indians have their little contingency behind the dugout. They are all fired up and ready to celebrate.
And the 1-2 pitch, swung out and missed. He struck him out. And after a 9-year wait, Central Division title number 8 belongs
to Cleveland.
Central Division title number 8, the first time since 2007, the first playoff appearance, of course, since 2013. And joining us now to talk about the Indian Central Division Championship, the man with the voice that you just heard calling that final out as Cody Allen picked up the save, Mr. Matt Underwood. Matty, how are you, my friend? Good to talk to you.
I'm well, Bob. I think I'm recovered from last night, ready to go get him again tonight.
I hope you are recovered better than they are because, you know, I was talking to our mutual friend Zach Meisel, who covers the Indians for the Northeast Media Group, and I asked him what the schedule was like today, and he said, I don't know because there are probably a whole lot of hungover baseball players, and they might have altered their schedule today, and they earned their celebration last night, Matt.
Yeah, this might be the Columbus Clippers versus the Detroit Tigers tonight. I think you'll see a lot of those guys, Jesus Aguilar, Eric Gonzalez, Michael Martinez. I think you'll see all of those guys in the lineup for tonight's game.
Now, do you agree with that? Before we get into what happened last night, the reason I ask is because, you know, right now it's over. They won the division, but there is still the matter of home field advantage, at least for the first round. You want to at least try to get it for the first round, even if you might not be able to catch the Rangers and have it, in a potential American League Championship Series. Do you like the idea that they're going to go young today and let the regulars rest, that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, this isn't something that he's going to do the rest of the season. I think this is a reward for those guys all the, you know, the hard work that they put in. I think Terry feels like, you know, they deserve to have a day to just kind of sit back, relax, catch their breath. And then you'll see the regulars playing tomorrow and throughout the rest of the season, because you're right, they very much want to try and earn home field advantage in that first round of the playoffs and potentially throughout. You know, we'll see how the rest of this week plays out, but they're not going to just sit back and rest the regulars the rest of the season. I think it's tonight is a kind of a one-time deal to just get most of those guys off their feet and give them a chance to just sort of sit back and reflect, and they'll get back at it tomorrow.
Matt, can you talk about what this feels like for you? You know, you and we listen to you and Rick and watch you guys, and you're having the time of your lives. This is what it's all about. You've been through enough seasons where they've had 90 losses or more, and the season's over by June or July, and you just kind of try to make it interesting for the viewer on Fox Sports Ohio and Sports Time Ohio, and now you get an opportunity to let the game be the entertainment. You guys don't have to try to make it entertaining. The game is the entertainment because they've been in this thing and in first place for, what, nearly 3 months or over 3 months, and now to see it culminate in a championship. How's this feel for you?
Yeah, this team has been just a pure joy to watch, to cover, to be around. Going back to spring training when it all sort of started to come together, every team is its own story, and no two seasons are ever alike. The personalities often change. The personality of a team can change from one year to the next. When we go to spring training next February, regardless of how the rest of this postseason ends up, it won't be the same. It'll be different, one way or the other. And so it's been fun to watch these guys really come together as a team, a very close-knit bunch. The off-season additions of Mike Napoli and Rajay Davis were huge, because of the energy and the enthusiasm that they brought. You saw great growth from players like Jason Kipnis, who've been here for a while. You saw the emergence of Jose Ramirez, who stepped in when Michael Brantley went down. You saw Francisco Lindor not suffering any effects from a fantastic rookie campaign. If anything, he's gotten even better. So it's been fun just to watch these guys reach their potential and fulfill the goal of every player, which is to be able to pop some champagne and play in October.
Matt, I run the risk of alienating a lot of our Tigers fans who listen here in Toledo, of course, with the Mudhens being the affiliate of the Tigers. But how sweet do you think it felt for the Indians to clinch this thing, if you can't do it at home, to do it in the park of your greatest, you know, in-division rival, the team that had owned you for the better part of the last several years? I mean, some really big-time, you know, numbers. In fact, what the Indians are doing to them now, that kind of thing, 14-2 on the season. They've outscored the Tigers by 50 runs this season, 103-53. To clinch this up there in their building, any more special for the Indians?
I don't know that it carries any more significance as far as that's concerned. I just know that, you know, if you're going to be the best, you've got to beat the best. That's as old as it gets in sports, and particular in pro sports. And Detroit's been division champion, I think, 4 out of the last 5 years. So they were the team coming into the season that I said, look, they're at the top. Somebody's got to knock them off. Kansas City obviously is the defending world champs. So everybody, I think, overlooked Kansas City early in the year, but I said all along, hey, until somebody dethrones Kansas City, They're the team to beat. But standing directly in Cleveland's way year after year after year, it has been the Detroit Tigers because they have a great ball club. They've got a tremendous lineup that you can't take a breath when you're pitching against. They've got good pitching staff, and, you know, headlined by Justin Verlander, who's going to go tonight. I just think what this team did this year, for whatever reason, they had their number from the get-go. From the first game they played at Comerica Park, they've beaten them. They've beaten them every which way you can. They beat them in close games. They beat them in blowout fashion. And I think last night sort of epitomized why this team is better than Detroit this year. It's that ability to score late. It's ability to keep the other team from scoring late. The Tigers' bullpen has been their Achilles heel. The Indians' bullpen has been truly one of their strengths, especially since the trade to acquire Andrew Miller.
Oh, no question. He has been just unbelievable and worth, at least for now, you feel like he's worth every bit of the expenditure that that the front office had to make, including Clint Frazier. And, you know, those guys might go on to be all-stars at some point or another, but for now, it is a great deal. We're talking to Matt Underwood, who is the television voice of the Cleveland Indians on Fox Sports Ohio. He and Rick Manning, of course, calling the game last night. Rick, Matty, what do you know about Corey Kluber? I understand it was a strain or tightness or something of that nature in the groin. I'm hoping not too serious given what this pitching staff is already facing.
It's something that he's been sort of dealing with for a little while now. I don't know exactly how long he's been fighting through it, but it's something that kind of grabbed. There was a play last night. It was a ground ball up the middle. Jason Kipnis got to it, but when he flipped it to second, the ball kind of went awry, and when Corey spun around, he went to back up the play, and I think it just kind of grabbed in that instance, and Terry kind of, I think, you know, it's a situation where let's be precautionary right here. You need Corey Kluber if you have any hope at all to win in the postseason. You have to have him, and you've got to have him at 100%. So I think the smart move was get him out of the game, get it to the bullpen, which has been tremendous this year, make sure he's okay. They have sent him back to Cleveland for further evaluation to make sure that there's nothing in there that's serious. So everybody collectively will be holding their breath with regards to the Indians organization in hopes that there's nothing seriously wrong there. He's got 10 days before the first start in the postseason, so maybe it's just a situation where some rest will do him a lot of good, and hopefully we'll have an update. I would assume we'll have some kind of a medical update by game time tonight.
Yeah, I would imagine so, and certainly hope so. And let's assume the best for a second, Matt, if we could. You know, it's already tough without your two and your three, without Carrasco and Salazar following him, and then you have Trevor Bauer slotted in at fourth, and Josh Tomlin probably not going to start in in a four-game series or a five-game series, beg your pardon, in a four-man rotation. And now here we are. It's Bauer two and probably Tomlin three. Can they win in the postseason? And we can go ahead and speculate about maybe a first-round Boston matchup. They're the hottest team in baseball, 11 in a row. Can they win in the postseason with a Kluber, Bauer, Tomlin 1-2-3 in the first five-game series?
I think they can. Obviously, you know, that's a regardless of whether you play Boston or Texas, both of those teams have tremendous lineups. So, you know, they are going to be tough to hold down. I think the key is, regardless of who's starting, is to keep your team in the game, not let it be a rout early. I think because of the strength of the bullpen and because of the off days, you can go to Andrew Miller, to Brian Shaw, to Cody Allen for multiple innings if necessary. Dan Otero's got an ERA of around 1.5. He's been tremendous this year. He'll be used as well. I think, you know, when you get into the postseason, unless you've got a guy like a Kluber who can maybe go out there and dominate for 7-8 innings, you don't necessarily need your starters to get that deep into the ballgame when you've got a bullpen that has been as good and dependable and reliable as Cleveland's is. So, yeah, I think they do have a chance as long as whoever's starting doesn't give up 5-6 runs in the first couple of innings. Just keep your team in the game, get it to the sixth inning, and then let that bullpen take over.
We're talking to Matt Underwood, the Indians' television voice. Matt, your phone is kind of getting a little bit of distortion interference now. It was a little bit hard to hear that last answer, so I don't know if there's a clear area you can get to as we ask you a couple more quick ones. And if not, it's okay. We appreciate your time. But, Matt, can you describe the job that Terry Francona has done given everything that has challenged this team this year, from Brantley not being there virtually the entire year, arguably the team's best player, arguably their best hitter, Yan Gomes, who, of course, was not having a good year at the plate, but whose work behind the dish was so instrumental to how good this pitching staff was, and then, of course, Salazar and Carrasco, you know, Almonte gone for 80 games. The job he has done in building a division champion, despite all of that, can you try to put that into words?
In 2013, when he came to Cleveland, he, in many respects, rescued the organization. They had really fallen into the depths of despair. It was not a good team. It was not a good lineup. There wasn't a lot of hope. His arrival just injected a lot of enthusiasm right away. They made some key offseason acquisitions, and what do you know, first year, he's got him in that wild card spot with an incredible run, winning 10 in a row to end the season to get into that wild card game. I think even with the job he did that year, this might be his best managing job of his career, given the challenges that he had. Certainly coming into the season, even the national prognosticators liked Cleveland because of the starting pitching, but none of us could have foreseen a loss of the magnitude of Michael Brantley and still said this will be the second highest scoring team in the American League. It's incredible how he has managed the pieces together to get the kind of productivity he has. I mean, this is an outfield that has really been a revolving door. It's not a set outfield. He has mixed and matched and used the platoon roles perfectly. And the strength of the lineup, obviously, has been Lindor, Napoli, Jason Kipnis, Jose Ramirez. Those guys have pretty much been the bedrock. But all the pieces around them have been sort of interchangeable and moving in and out, and yet it's still a high-scoring team. And so he's managed the loss of Brantley. He's managed in and out of the starting rotation, Carlos Carrasco for a period of time and now down again, Danny Salazar for a period of time and now down again. I think he's just done a tremendous job of holding it all together and keeping this team focused on today. Focus on today, and once the game is over, then you move on to the next one. And they've done a tremendous job, and I think that's why they're raising the Central Division flag.
Matty, I don't want to get anybody's hopes up, least of all my own, but I keep reading lines like Salazar played long toss, Salazar threw a bullpen or threw or something like that, as if he still thinks that maybe possibly he can get back in time to pitch in this postseason. Again, without trying to get too excited about something like that, what do you know, if anything?
I think he has designs on trying to get back. The question is, you know, when you miss that kind of time, will he be able to come back and really impact this team meaningfully? I don't know. I think that's still up in the air. Should they advance maybe to the second round, I think there is a greater opportunity for that. I don't know that with the time he's missed he could come back and be a starter, but with his arm, if he could give you an inning or two coming out of the bullpen with the way he throws the baseball, that could still be very meaningful to this club. And to add to that, I think Carlos Carrasco is in a similar situation. You know, he suffered the fracture of pinky on his throwing hand, but I know Carlos is very determined. He wants to try and get back and help this club if at all possible. So that comes down to how quickly that can heal, how quickly he can pick up a baseball and start throwing again. But, you know, when you get into this situation, it's infectious. Everybody wants to be part of it. You know, Michael Brantley was in that clubhouse celebrating last night. But it was a bit of a somber celebration for him because he knows he can't. He has no chance to be able to come back and help this team. But when you're in that atmosphere, you want to do everything you can to try and be part of it. So I wouldn't put it past Salazar or Carrasco should the Indians advance to see them back and being able to help this club at some point.
So you're not helping me here, Matt. I said I didn't want to get too, you know, get my expectations up or get excited about Salazar. I didn't think Carrasco was even a remote possibility. He's in a cast. He's got a broken bone or a non-displaced fracture
right
on his pitching hand. I thought he was 6 to 8 weeks minimum, and we're only, what, three into that, I think.
Again, you know, look, Bob, you and I have been around a long time. We played sports. We played with guys who played with incredible pain. It comes down to pain threshold, pain tolerance. We both know the story of Jack Youngblood, who played in the Super Bowl with a hairline fracture in his leg. You never know how far the human spirit can push someone when they're purely motivated to be part of that team and to help in any way possible. The medical staffs nowadays do a tremendous job of protecting the athlete from themselves, so they're not going to let anybody, put themselves in harm's way. But if it's possible, and that's why I say, you know, I leave that hanging out there. If it's possible, I wouldn't put it past either one of them to try and get back and take the field at some point, whether it's in a starting role or a supporting role. You know, we'll all hope for the best. I'd say obviously the odds are long against it. But again, what we saw last night in Miami, how can you ever say anything is truly impossible anymore?
Wow, that's very well said. And by the way, the human spirit and the competitive fire in an athlete, a great comparison there with the Youngblood story. I get all of that. I you know, it's more a question if it's just pain threshold, then maybe they push through and they allow that fire to take over. But I'm thinking more from the medical side. Like, will it damage it any more if he tries to gut it out and endure the pain and fire? Would it damage the hand any more? And then suddenly,
if that's the case, they won't let him do it. If that's the case, yeah. They just won't let it happen. But if it's a situation of where, okay, you know, this is as good as it's going to get. You're not going to hurt yourself anymore. But if you want to try, go ahead. Then, you know, that's where you never know.
Absolutely right. Hey, Matt, since you brought it up, the D. Gordon story from yesterday. I guess you just have to watch it over and over again, which I'm sure we all have, and try to experience it through their eyes, if it's even possible. You could see through the tears in his eyes. This is a guy who had not homered all year. I think that's his eighth of his career. I think he homers once every 269 at-bats, I read. For him to come up and lead off that game after that ceremony that they held for their fallen friend, and I'm going to continue to call him a friend, not just a teammate, for that to happen, I mean, you're right. I mean, and what D. Gordon said after the game, too, was so perfect. He said, if you don't believe in God, you might as well start, because that's the only way to really explain what happened there.
Yeah, and it's one of those stories, and we see these occasionally in sports. They're not every day. They may not even be every year, but every once in a while a story comes along, and we all say the same thing, which is, if you tried to sell this as a movie script, you'd get laughed out of the office. There's no way. That can't possibly happen. But they do happen. These things do occur every once in a while to just maybe to restore our faith in mankind. And remembering all the good that we're capable of, because nowadays it seems like with the presidential debates as a backdrop to this, all we're really enamored in is tearing each other down and beating each other up and pointing out everyone's flaws. But every once in a while, a story like this comes along and it reminds us that we are a special breed, human beings, and we are capable of greatness and reaching down when all hope is seemingly lost. And pulling ourselves out of despair. And that was a moment where, you know, the Miami Marlins needed it. I think the baseball community needed it, because players all over the league were just devastated by that news. And I think the fans needed it, too, because the fans can empathize with the players. They can empathize with someone who's lost someone close to them, because we've all gone through it. And to see a guy go out with tears in his eyes and accomplish that, it was just an incredible moment, and one that we won't soon forget, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think it was very cathartic for a lot of people. And
yeah.
By the way, Jose Fernandez, 38-17 with a 2.58 ERA in his first 76 starts. It's impossible to really describe what kind of future this 24-year-old had that has been yanked away from him and yanked away from all of those fans, and not just Miami either, but really across baseball that was going to watch, you know, that we're going to watch, you know, one of the great young talents of this generation develop. He hadn't even hit his prime yet at the age of 24. And you know, to be robbed of that, it is a very difficult thing for everybody to accept. The sadness for the family and for his own loss, of course, notwithstanding, just baseball lost something special with this tremendous young talent being gone.
And I think it's difficult for a lot of us to fully comprehend how important he was to the Cuban-American community, especially in Miami, but all over the country and all over the world for that matter as well. He was certainly a beacon for people who said, he's like me, you know, that's my guy. And they recognized all of his great qualities, and he was an example to all Cuban Americans of what they could aspire to. And in many ways, I think it's very similar to the death of Roberto Clemente and how devastating that was to the Puerto Rican community and the people that loved and adored Clemente. And I think this is very similar in many ways, because Jose Fernandez was that guy for them. He was someone they all looked to and aspired to be like, and he carried the flag for them. And so to have him robbed at such a young age is just really devastating for those people in particular.
No question about it, Matt. Very, very well said, and points very well received. Matt, last thing before you go, do you have a preference? You mentioned Texas's lineup and Boston's lineup. They're both very, very formidable, no matter who the Indians' rotation is going to be. Do you have a preference about who you'd like to see in the divisional series?
Not really, because I think if you're going to get to the World Series, you're going to have to beat both of them anyway. I don't see the wild card winner beating any of these teams should they draw the wild card in that first round. So I think it's going to be a tough road either way you look at it. If you look at Boston, great lineup. Pitching's been a little bit of an issue at times, in particular the bullpen, but it looks like they've got that straightened around now. You know, Texas, great lineup. Their starting pitching has been a little hit and miss. I think all these teams are very similar. They all have good lineups. Starting pitching has some question marks. Obviously, they've got very good bullpens, or they wouldn't be where they're at right now. I don't think it matters, Bob. I really don't. I think, you know, from a fan's perspective, I know from the national TV perspective, they would love nothing better than Tito Francona and the Indians playing the Boston Red Sox, whether it's in the first round or in the ALCS. That would be a dream matchup for those folks for sure.
You think Tito feels the same way?
You know, I think so. He won't. I don't think he would ever publicly admit this, because you never want to, you know, give anybody any kind of bulletin board material or anything of that nature. But I think privately he'd love nothing better than have an opportunity to play Boston in the postseason when everything's on the line.
Yeah, I can't imagine why. And you're right. You don't want to say anything, but gee, you wonder why he has those feelings. Matt, really, really great conversation. Really enjoyed it. Keep up the outstanding work. Can't wait to hear you and Rick and Andre call playoff baseball in October, first time since 13. And that was only a one-game shot. So we look forward to checking in with you guys again. Keep up the awesome work, and thanks for the time.
Thanks, Bob. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
Matt Underwood, the voice of the Cleveland Indians on the TV side of things, does just a fantastic job along with Rick Manning. Very, very insightful, both those guys. Enjoyed that conversation. All right. From the euphoria of victory, and that's what we got from the Indians last night, to the pain of watching your enemies celebrate in your building, celebrating in your clubhouse. Do you remember, Kush? How the Cavaliers didn't take too kindly to Steph Curry talking about how when he came back to Cleveland for the first time after beating them.
And how appropriate final. That's the reference, since the yesterday was media day, and that's why way at the beginning you heard some Cavs and Pistons stuff in there. But yes, yep, of course, yep. I remember that.
And he referenced something about the visiting locker room still smells like sweet like champagne, and that didn't sit well. Well, that's what the Tigers are going to have to sit with for a little while. Not that the Indians have said anything, you know, controversial, but they dumped champagne all over the visiting locker room and clubhouse, I should say, yesterday at Comerica. The Tigers, of course, still fighting and scratching and trying to keep their own wild card hopes alive. We're going to check in with Anthony Fenech, our good friend, friend from the Detroit Free Press, coming right up. But before we do that, let me do this for you. I promised yesterday I had a pair of tickets for you to the Haunted Hydro, and I do. As a matter of fact, I've got two pairs of tickets to the Haunted Hydro in Fremont. And I mentioned I was going to give a pair out yesterday, and somebody tweeted me. I forgot. And somebody tweeted me and said, dude, what happened to Haunted Hydro tickets? I want to go. And I said, I'll give you two pair, or not you, but I'll give two pairs away to two different winners in the first hour of this afternoon's show to make up for that. So I'm going to do that now. If you are callers number 9 and 10, you will win a pair of tickets to the Haunted Hydro. Halloween season is in full effect already in Fremont. Call 866-240. You got to get the 866 in there before you get the 2. 866-240-1065. Callers 9 and 10, you will have Haunted Hydro tickets waiting for you. Tigers Talk coming up with Fenech right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
106.5 The Ticket right now traffic. Sponsored by SuperFitnessToledo.com. Serving Toledo since 1972 for less than $5 per week average cost.
No accidents to report at this time. King and Sylvania, there's construction that may cause a delay. That's your right now traffic.
There it is. That's the right now traffic indeed. And Bob France here for the Buckeye Store and More. The College and Pro Superstore. I love this place. I love Jim Damschroeder. He's the owner at the Buckeye Store and More. Just a diehard Buckeye fan, but so respectful of all of the other fandoms that we have in Northwest Ohio and indeed in Southeast Michigan. So if you're a Buckeye fan, this is your heaven, man. Scarlet and gray everywhere, from clothing to decor, stuff for your car, stuff for your man cave, stuff for your garage, whatever the case might be. You got Buckeye stuff everywhere. But guess what? If you're you're a Maize and Blue diehard, or if you like the Fighting Irish, the Spartans, the Rockets, the Falcons, or the Tigers on the baseball side, there's a fan zone for you in the Buckeye store and more as well. And right now, all of it, 10% off. That's right, 10% store-wide savings, every item in the store. And if you get in early most days, 50 to 75% off select items, doorbuster sales. That's right. They got hundreds of new Nike products in stock for the Buckeyes and more. Just get to the Buckeye store and more in Sylvania, Starlight Plaza, 5700 Monroe. That's the Buckeye store and more, the College and Pro Superstore.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
And a big congratulations to our Haunted Hydro Pass winners, Jason Stasher of Toledo and Cameron Bosselman of Toledo. They each got a pair of tickets to the Haunted Hydro in Fremont. Enjoy yourself. It should be a great time out there at the Haunted Hydro.
And no fear, we got plenty of those left to come.
We do. As a matter of fact, we got a sweet deal a little bit later on today, too, involving the Haunted Hydro that we'll tell you about in the second hour of the program. A great conversation with Matt Underwood, the television voice of the Cleveland Indians, talking about the clinching of the Central Division Championship last night. And I asked Matt, do you think it felt any more special for them to clinch it in Detroit? That you always want to do it in front of your home fans, but if you can't, to do it on the field and in the clubhouse of your most heated rival in division, does it feel any better? Especially because the Tigers had owned the Indians for the better part of the last several years and had won the division four out of the last 5 years. And he said he doesn't really think so. But let's find out how the Tiger side of it feels. Anthony Fenech, our good friend who covers those Tigers for the Detroit Free Press, joining us once again on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. What's going on, Anthony? How you doing?
What's up, Bob?
All right, brother. Appreciate you spending some time with us. What do you think? Is that kind of a stick in the craw of most Tiger fans or the Tigers themselves to see, again, their geographical rival and their division rival celebrating and pouring champagne all over the visitors' clubhouse?
I don't really know because of the position the Tigers are in right now. I mean, coming into this series, it was very unlikely, almost miraculous, if they were to have any sort of chance at the American League Central. So I think the Tigers fans are kind of a little bit resigned to the fact that they're going for the wild card right now. But, you know, talking, we had a good conversation with J.D. Martinez after the game yesterday. He was one of the guys in the Tigers dugout that was sticking around watching the celebration, and he said it does. It was a tough pull to swallow to watch that. But then conversely, you see Ian Kinsler, who was just matter-of-factly, no, I didn't watch that. Why would I watch that? That's not my celebration. I don't think the Tigers liked it because, again, this is a team that had the Indians' number. But this season, man, it comes down to the fact that the Tigers haven't been able to beat the Indians. And if they're not able to beat them in the next 3 days, that's probably what's gonna seal their postseason fate. So they got Justin Verlander tonight, but man, it's just been really surprising the way the Indians have just dominated the Tigers this year.
Yeah, you know, it really has been. I don't care who you are or how much better than another team that you are or you know, that you think you are. 14-2 is really, really hard to do in 16 games. And not just, you know, we were talking to the TV play-by-play voice for the Indians, Anthony, and he pointed out they've beaten the Tigers every in any way they can that there is. Close games, blowout games, great pitching performances, you know, big bats, whatever it is, they've done it. And then they've ended up outscoring them by 50 runs in 16 games, 103-53 overall. I know for a fact the Indians are not that much better than the Tigers. So is it just one of these anomalies? Just a year in which, you know, two teams that are, I don't want to say equally matched. I think the Indians are better. Certainly the numbers would bear that out. But they're not that much better. This is one of those, you know, outliers, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the only way to kind of explain it. I also think that the Indians, they deserve some credit. Their advanced scouting, the guys that don't get any pub ever, the guys that are watching the Tigers on a daily basis before the two teams meet, I think they've really had a good game plan on how to attack some of these guys like Miguel Cabrera and Victor Martinez and J.D. Martinez this year. They've really neutralized the middle of that lineup. And but really, like you said, I don't think the Indians are that much better than the Tigers. Not 2-14, not 14-2 better than the Tigers. But that's just kind of the way it shook out this year. And really, the Tigers, look, if they were to even split these games with the Indians, it'd still be a battle for the division going down there. But the fact that it's been so lopsided, you know, clinched the Central this early and truly put the Tigers behind the eight ball for the wild card.
Yeah, no question about it. And, you know, it's not just the Tigers. The Indians, again, just going back to some of the numbers from the division championship or that the division championship club has put out, they have won more games in the division this year than, the third most wins in division since 1998 in realignment, which is a pretty astounding thing as well. They are hammering the rest of the Central. 2007, they won, which is their last division championship. They won 48 games in the division. 2001, they won 47 games in the division, and now 46 with these three more to come against the Tigers. So they could end up with the most wins against the Central since the expansion and realignment in 1998. So it's not just the Tigers. The Indians have kind of made a living off of just beating up everybody in the division, and that's a good way to clinch it as early as they have.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think I forgot. Maybe it was my good friend Zach Meisel that wrote about it, or Hoynsey. Somebody wrote about the fact that the Indians were they kind of were focusing on the division coming into this year, and I mean they've really zeroed in and done. I didn't even know any of those numbers you just brought up, but that's pretty astounding. And
well, here's another astounding one.
When I talked to you early in the season, it just seemed like the Indians had this sort of mojo about them that would just, you know, I know they kind of faded a little bit early in the second half, but they just had that thing this year where they got a good group of guys over there, and they weren't going to give up. And, you know, I see a little bit of it with the Tigers, but time's running out.
Well, you know, a couple of other quick ones on this, Anthony. Justin Verlander goes tonight, and as you mentioned, they've got to win. They've really got to beat the Indians three times here and then go to Atlanta and do some damage to try to have a chance at this wild card. And you think, okay, Justin is on the mound. He's your best pitcher. You know, and Fulmer's had just a remarkable year, but this is still JV. And I look at these numbers. You know, he used to dominate the Indians. And just since I gave you those, the Indians have now beaten Justin Verlander seven consecutive decisions dating back to 2015, 4-0 this year. He used to absolutely handcuff them. But now, because of the last couple of years, in 47 career starts against Cleveland, Justin Verlander is 21-26. No, let me rephrase. He didn't get decisions in all those. The Indians have won 26 and lost 21 in games, 47 games started by JV. So he needs to snap that tonight if the Tigers are to have any chance.
Oh yeah, and I don't know if Terry Francona put out his lineup, but I wouldn't expect some of the regulars to be in there like Carlos Santana, Jason Kipnis, Mike Napoli. And again, I think it's one of those things where it's good advanced scouting and good game plans against Verlander. I mean, remember early in the season they had that game here where Marlon Byrd and you know that's something that's still kind of a sore spot with the Tigers. Say the Tigers miss out on they fall one game behind the Orioles for the division. Well, that's a guy that got popped for PEDs that hit a big home run off Justin Verlander in the seventh inning here at Comerica Park. Now, that's not excuses or anything because, look, earlier in the season, they hit four home runs off of him, and I believe it was the fourth or fifth inning. So they've had their way with him as of late. And, you know, today it's pretty much a do-or-die game. You play 162 of these, but if the Tigers can't win tonight with Verlander on the mound against kind of the Indians B squad, the hungover B squad, I think that's it for the Tigers.
Anthony Fenech is our guest. He is talking Tigers with us. He writes for the Detroit Free Press covering those Tigers. Jim Cushlin is here alongside as well. Cush, go ahead.
Yeah, first of all, Anthony, I'm in agreement with that. I mean, yes, the Tigers are still in this thing as far as the wild card concerned, but it's already now two games tied with the Mariners. So I kind of agree with the Indians most likely sending up the bench bunch tonight. And last time when we talked with TV voice of the Indians, Matt Irwin, he kind of indicated that might be the case. It's Verlander start. So I agree with that.
You said this would be the Columbus Clippers version of the Indians lineup.
That precisely.
It's a good thing for Detroit.
Precisely. So I'm fully with you there, Anthony. I think the Tigers absolutely need to win this one tonight with the Indians Columbus Clippers squad plus Verlander starting because they're already two out. They need to at least maintain that. But one thing I've been reading here and there, he had a couple of bullpen session simulated games. Any word or status right now on Jordan Zimmermann, are we going to be able to have him back at all for the Tigers, or should at this point we just scratch him off and say he's done?
No, if I had to guess, I'd say he's going to pitch on Friday or Saturday in Atlanta. He threw out of the bullpen on Sunday against the Royals, and he looked much better than he did the previous two times he came off the disabled list. personally, I felt like the Tigers should have started him yesterday instead of Buck Farmer. But they opted to give him another simulated game in Minnesota, so that was unable. They were unable to do that. He was actually supposed to throw a simulated game yesterday, but since he threw on Sunday, they bumped it back. And asking manager Brad Ausmus after the game on Sunday, he seemed pretty optimistic. Just the way that he answered that, yeah, Zimmerman would be a consideration for a start against the Braves. He seemed pretty optimistic. So it's something that we'll be asking Brad here in a little bit. But if I had money, I'd probably put it on Zimmerman starting against the Braves this weekend.
You know, the Braves series is one. If the Tigers can take care of some business here against the Indians, especially tonight, as we talked about with Verlander going against what will not be the Indians' regular lineup, if they can take care of business in two out of the three, or you know, for their sake, three out of three, it's still a tough road because Atlanta might be 63-92, but as pointed out in your paper today, they're 13-9 in September, and they had a seven-game winning streak just snapped on Saturday by the Marlins. So this is a team that is not a gimme, you know, that you can just go down there into Atlanta and expect to roll them as well. And the magic number, again, according to the Free Press, Anthony, to clinch against the Orioles is 9. They need a combination of 9 wins and/or 9 Orioles losses, and it's 10 against Toronto. The good news is Toronto and the Orioles play one another for 3. One of them is going to have to sweep the other, probably, for the Tigers to have a chance. Would you agree?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, right now the Tigers at the least have to go 5-1, and then they need a little bit of help here, and that's what's really them dropping the ball against the Royals this weekend is really. It's really done to them because they had kind of destiny in their own hands, but now they're going to need some help. So I don't know if they exactly need it. I think if I were them, obviously they'd want a sweep of either Toronto or Baltimore, preferably Baltimore. But I think if Toronto beats Baltimore 2 out of 3, they're still going to have a fighting shot. But if I had to guess, I'd say they're probably going into the weekend. I'd expect them to at least have a shot 2 games back, 1 game back, something like that. I don't think they're going to be out of it by the weekend. Just because I think the Indians are going to take their foot off the gas a little bit here and get their pitching set up for the postseason and maybe rest some of their guys to get them a breather. And then again, the intensity, you just clinch the division. You just earned your goal for the regular season. I think the intensity naturally kind of drops off.
I think if it happens, it'll be because, you know, like, all right, you know, just the big exhale. Like you said, the intensity is naturally going to drop up. But I don't think they're going to take their foot off the gas from the standpoint of trying to win because they are within a game of Boston and Texas. Somebody is going to have home field throughout the entire American League playoffs. And if they were fortunate enough to get to the World Series, as Cush pointed out yesterday, the American League won the All-Star game. So, you know, they got home field on the line here. And I know they don't want to have to play a game 1 and or a game 5 in Boston or a game 1 or a game 5. In Arlington, Texas, or Game 7 in Arlington, Texas, if it comes down that way. They want to do that up in Cleveland.
No, absolutely, especially because they've played so well at home as of late versus on the road. So I think that is an important thing, and it's going to factor it. I'm not saying that they're going to throw in the towel here, but I just think that naturally, after the high of clinching the division,
yeah,
the Tigers still needing these wins so badly, I think that the Tigers could steal at least 2 of these games coming up, if not 3, and that's what they need to do.
Go ahead, Jim.
One thing I've been thinking of, too, is now the only avenue for the Tigers to make the playoffs is this wild card game. We've just been outlining how difficult it's going to be over what amounts to these last 6 games. Other than the obvious that all the Brad Ausmus talk, which is slightly a separate conversation, what would it say about this Tigers team and how they've been built for at least this season if they can't even make the 1 game wild card?
If they can't, I just think that it says that they just weren't a good enough team in terms of the moves in the off season were not a lot of them panned out. They just didn't pan out. I mean, in terms of, you know, now Justin Upton's kind of salvaging the season here in the last couple of months, but Jordan Zimmerman didn't pan out, Pelfrey and Lowe didn't pan out. So I think to me this wasn't a team that was looking at them on paper coming into the season. I think we thought they were going to be a much better team because we banked on at least a couple of them, those free agent signings panning out, and they just haven't.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, Anthony. And Cushlin, remind me next time I start to ask a question and you start at the same time to not defer to you because you just kind of stole what I was going to ask him. But I was going to ask it a little bit differently and ask this. And Anthony, I'll ask you this again when we talk at the end of the season, if it comes down to this. But if they don't make the playoffs, I was going to ask you for a description of this season. How do you think that the Detroit fans, the organization, will feel about 2016 if they don't make the playoffs based on the fact that, you know, 4 months ago we were on Ausmus watch. Everybody was waiting for the shoe to drop and for them to announce, Avila to announce that he was done. And because they lost, what, eight in a row or nine in a row or something like that. And he weathered that storm, and then they went on a big winning streak, and then they've been kind of team streaked the rest of the way. So at the end of it all, if they come up short here and don't make the playoffs, don't make the wild card, how do you think would be, what do you think would be the fairest description of the season for Tigers fans?
Just disappointing again. I mean, they had some high expectations coming into the season. I'd say it was disappointing. I mean, I think this team, and they endured some injuries with, you know, J.D. Martinez and Nick Castellanos. The room has been out a couple of months. Yeah. They've had some good bright spots, you know.
Maybe it's been playing hurt, too. But
yeah, for sure. And you know, Victor Martinez has probably been hurt a while. I just think that it's just disappointing because, I mean, this is a team that, you know, the years are numbered now, and now they pretty much have one more shot next year with the way this team built to contend for a title. So I guess disappointing would be my word.
Yeah, and I think that would be fair, especially, again, because they kind of got the hopes up after the rough start or the rough stretch there in May, and everybody was still looking at Ausmus and wondering if he was going to survive that. And for them to get hope and to kind of – and here's the worst part about it, I think, Anthony, is getting Tigers fans' hopes up just, what, a month ago? They had cut it to two? Didn't they knock the division lead down from 7 to 7.5, Cushlin, down to 2 at one point?
Yep. Yeah, it got us quick. Right around Labor Day, it was as close as 2.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, we're talking about a month. It went from 2 to now you lost the division with 6-7 games still left to play that the Indians have clinched it. So, it's you know, it is a very disappointing ending, and no doubt for Tigers fans, especially if they can't find a way to get into that wild card game. All right. Hey, Anthony Fenech, great stuff as always. We appreciate your time. Good, sir. Go write for the newspaper. We'll talk to you again next time.
Cool. Bob, Robert, Jim, James. See you guys later.
You got it, brother. There you go. Anthony, Tony Fenech joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. All right. Really good baseball hour. Enjoyed the conversation with Matt Underwood a lot. Really always enjoy the conversation, too, with Mr. Anthony Fenech. Want to get you involved into the conversation as we continue. A lot more to get into. You may have noticed in the montage, Cushlin had some basketball stuff. What? Yeah, that's because media days were held. Stan Van is talking, LeBron James and the Cavaliers and Tyronn Lue are talking as we get close to the start of NBA, at least practice is starting now, but get close to the preseason and the NBA starting next month as well. So we'll get into that a little bit too as we continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Payoff pitch. Swung out and belted to deep right. Away, back and gone. No doubt about it, two-run blast to right. Swung on, hit high in the air to deep right field. Back goes Martinez on the track, at the wall, it is gone. Roberto Perez with an opposite field home run to right. And the Indians get a mammoth insurance run as Allen tries to finish it off. The 0-2 pitch, a swing and a miss, ball game. And once again, Cleveland, you will have an October to remember. The Indians, for the 8th time, American League Central Division champs, their first division title in 9 years, and the mobbing goes on out at short.
I want to blow it out. It's so hard to get to do one of these things that they deserve every minute of it. And I want them to celebrate. They should be so proud of what they did. It's hard, and it's a lot that goes into trying to even just, you know, win a division. Certainly the season's all over, but they deserve every minute of joy they have in it.
You know, this is awesome. This is exactly where you want to be at the start of the season, celebrating with some champagne with all your buddies. It's awesome. It's not just a one game and go home. Now we get to stay there, get our feet wet, and we're not just happy to be there. We're coming for some people.
The
seeing the smiles on my teammates' faces and hearing the roar of our fans. That's the main thing, you know, being able to see my teammates get their ring, to see, you know, how much when you put in a lot of hard work, this is the benefit of it. And then seeing the smiles on the team's faces, I mean, on my fans' faces when they just see that moment happen.
There's more things to accomplish. There's more things to go through. There's more things to experience. And then now you just refocus, reprioritize, and go at it again.
Well, with Mo Williams retiring, you know, with us losing Dele, you know, I think it's important to, you know, find who's going to play that backup point guard, you know, and, you know, we might have to do it by committee. You know, Kay's coming along, Kay Felder. We can play Shumpert some backup point with LeBron on the floor with him. You know, Jordan McRae. So we're going to do it by committee until we figure out, you know, what's the best, you know, thing for this team.
J.R. Smith is not here today. As we've stated and coaches previously stated, we think very highly of J.R. We love him as a member of our team, and for that reason, we've made an incredibly competitive and aggressive offer to re-sign him. We hope that gets done in very short order. In a very late developing move, Mo Williams' agent reached out to me this morning and informed me that Mo is not going to continue his playing career.
This isn't a continuation of last year. We don't start at 44 wins and the eighth seed in the playoffs and try to climb. You start at zero wins and no guarantee of anything and try to work your way back up as high as you can go. And so, yeah, you start with the basics, you know, and you start for us, you know, with those things on the wall and try to teach those things. They should be able to do things and pick up things a lot quicker because we got a lot of guys back, but you still can't skip those steps. Now, why not us? Why does there have to be a ceiling on us? Why can't we be that team and contender? So, you know, that's my outlook on it, and I certainly think guys have high expectations.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
You know what? As we begin hour number two right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, it's weird, Kush. It almost seems like, wait, what? Why are we talking about basketball again? I feel like we just got done talking about the World Championship. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like we just watched Game 7. I feel like we just had Rick Noland on talking about Game 7 and about the championship and fans celebrating from one end of the from one end of the country if you're a Cavaliers fan, but certainly out there in Northeast Ohio, but fans celebrating all over. You know, Pistons fans talking about making the playoffs for the first time in a long time, but getting run out of there in the first round by the Cavaliers. It feels like that just happened. And yet what? What media day? What is this already?
Yeah, everybody's back. Camps are pretty much now officially underway for the NBA, whether you're talking Cavs or Pistons or any other team. You're about 27th of September, so you're about week and a half or so away from preseason openers of all things, because we're about to enter that block because hockey will be starting soon. We're about to enter that block where all four are going at the same time in terms of all four of the sports. And so, yeah, I figured I'd had to throw a little media day from both Cavs and Pistons in on that one. Because
no question.
That's already happened now.
no question, and I'm totally fine with that. It's just, you know what's weird is I guess because, and this is just my opinion, because the Cavaliers and the Warriors were the last two teams playing, It wasn't all that long ago.
No.
The Piston season ended quite a long time ago because it was a first-round exit.
End of April.
Teams that did not make, not end of April, end of May, wasn't it?
No, end of April. The last week's April were the first
that's
round.
That's right. May was all the playoffs, then June into the finals. Right.
Yep.
Okay, never mind. Anyway, yeah, so for them and for teams that did not make the playoffs, it probably feels like, man, it's about time that the NBA starts again. I've been looking forward to this. You know, we gotta see what we've got now. I promise you, teams like the New York Knicks are just, you know, have been counting down the days. Fans of the Knicks have been counting down the days. It's like, wait a minute, we retooled. We rebuilt this thing. What in the world? We got Derrick Rose now. We got Joakim Noah now. We got a whole new opportunity with a new, you know, our own sort of weird little strange version of a big three. You know, with Joakim and Carmelo and Derrick Rose and who's the other piece?
Kristaps Porzingis, their rookie.
And then Kristaps Porzingis.
One of the few good young players they seem to have drafted in the last 12, 15 years because that franchise has been so just idiotic.
Yeah, no question about it. They really have been. So, but for them, they're probably like, man, it's about time. And for those, you know, who are fans of the teams that were playing last, it's like, man, this got here really, really fast. So just kind of one of those strange little anomalies, I guess. It just depends on your perception.
Right.
You know, and who you root for as to whether it was a long time or a short time. I want to go back, though, in the top of the hour. And let's open up phone lines, too, at 866-240-1065. 866-240-1065. I want to go back to baseball for a moment. Nothing to do with the Indians or the Tigers and the playoff push for Detroit, the division championship for Cleveland. But the Jose Fernandez and Dee Gordon moment last night, is there anything else? And I'm asking legitimately, I don't have a list put together. This is really kind of just a stream of consciousness and off the top of my head kind of a moment. Can you think of another moment like that in sports? You know, not very often, but just from time to time, sports brings people together for a cathartic moment, you know, a moment of healing, a moment of unity, a moment of, I mean, I literally don't have any at the top of my head. Well, no, I just thought of one. I just thought of one. Different kind of moment. But to finish my thought, last night, of course, D. Gordon of the Marlins led off the game against the Mets after an unbelievably moving ceremony. Jim, did you see the ceremony
yes.
either in live or either or in on?
Yes, I saw it afterwards because despite some other things going on in the world, my attention was on a possible clinch day yesterday. But yes, I eventually saw the pregame ceremony they held in Miami.
I didn't see it until this morning because last night there was a presidential debate and I was covering that, talking about that. And
I did everything in my power to avoid turning that on at all costs. Honest to goodness, Bob, I am so glad it was. It turned out to be clinch night yesterday.
You are a wise man for having done that, by the way. we should all try to avoid that if we can. But some of us, this is what we got to do. We got a lot of different responsibilities, and that's one of mine. So anyway, between Monday Night Football last night, by the way, clinch night as well, and the debate, you know, you had plenty of things to keep you away from that, you know, in terms of the sports world. But anyway, I digress. I didn't see it until this morning. Listening to Mike and Mike, and then sometimes I'll flip on TV version of Mike and Mike, which, of course, you hear each and every morning right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. And they showed the ceremony, or at least a good portion of the ceremony, of the trumpet, or is it a trumpet or a bugle? When they play taps at a military funeral.
I always thought that was a bugle. I always thought that was technically a bugle, not a trumpet. I could be wrong. Don't quote me on that. I always thought it was a bugle,
right.
Though.
No, I tend to think you're right, but they called it this morning. Mike and Mike called it a trumpet, but I tend to think it's a bugle. I don't know. I don't want to get dragged down into that. But point being, you know, at a military service, memorial service, or a funeral, they play taps
yes.
on that lone bugle or trumpet. Well, they did that for Jose Fernandez, but because they couldn't do taps because he wasn't a military figure, they did Take Me Out to the Ball Game. As the entire Marlins team surrounded the mound, and they had a 16 on the mound. They stood there, and then they knelt there for Take Me Out to the Ball Game, played on a lone bugle or a lone trumpet. It was so moving. It was so stirring. It really, really did call to mind, like I said, a military service. But being respectful, of course, that is a military memorial
right.
service, they did with Take Me Out to the Ball Game in honor of what he did for a living, which was baseball. And then all of the players kind of with their fingers, I guess, kind of sketched out just a little message to Jose Fernandez in the mound, in the dirt on the mound. Just kind of like, you know, sign their name or a love you or 16 or whatever it was. And then it was a very, very moving ceremony. And again, the Mets did a wonderful job of it as well. They're the opponent here, and nobody wants to see the Mets win, of course, in this situation. You know, this is a night for celebrating the life of, and of course, commemorating the terrible, tragic loss of Jose Fernandez, but the Mets took part in this as well, and they were just wonderful. Just,
yeah.
just tremendous sports about these.
And the side note there is the Mets needed that one. They're in the thick of that NL wild card race. They need every game possible.
And after what happened what started off the Marlins, what would go on to be a 7-3 win, Dee Gordon, of course, was the first batter for the Marlins, and he led off the game in the bottom of the first with that home run. And as I mentioned to Matt when we were talking about this, the significance of that is, you know, can't be overstated because he's not a home run hitter. He's a very small, skinny little wisp of a leadoff hitter. He has 8 home runs now. He had 7 going into that.
Actually, no, it's 9. It's 9.
Oh, it's 9.
This was his first home run of the season
right.
for a guy who led the league in hits and stolen bases a year ago.
But, yes, that's his game.
Yep.
That's his game. He's the put it in play and go leg everything
exactly.
out type of player. He's not a home run hitter. So he had 8 in his career going into that at bat. And I like I said, I read a stat earlier. He hits a home run once every 269 at bats, which essentially comes out to about 2 a year, you know, figuring on a 550 or so at bat season. So for him to step up, take two balls, and then take the third pitch and drive that thing upper deck, what? That thing hit off the facing of the upper deck
yep.
before bouncing down into the deck below. That was one of those moments, and when he crossed that plate with just tears streaming down his face, there's no show there. You know, that wasn't a show. That was legitimate, heartfelt grief,
mm-hmm.
emotion, enthusiasm, excitement, pride, all in one weird, strange moment for him, because the sadness of Jose being gone, but the incredible pride for having honored him in the way that he just had, wearing his number, wearing 16 and the name Fernandez on the back, the way that the rest of the Marlins did, for him to lead off the game like that, following just, you know, a few short minutes after that ceremony. Just an amazing thing to bring people together, like I said. And if you read some of the tweets, and it's weird how Twitter just kind of becomes now the, you know, the go-to for people expressing themselves. But if you read some of the tweets from all around baseball, everybody agreed that this is what sport does, particularly this is what baseball does. It brings people together in a way, and that moment brings people together in a way that really nothing else can. You can have a prayer service if you want. It's not going to bring, you know, how many people are in that ballpark last night? I don't know what the attendance was. It's in Miami, and they don't get a ton of people there. But whatever the number was, if it's 10,000 or 50,000, it's irrelevant. But a prayer service isn't going to bring them together like that. It's not going to bring the type of emotion. A memorial, a funeral, whatever it is you're going to do. But a baseball game. And a moment like that, a moment where fate takes over, where maybe Jose Fernandez himself guides the ball off the bat, and just cheers it on from above, and all of the cliche type things that you hear, you don't experience that anywhere else other than in sport. And I understand it might be kind of redundant to say, well, where else is it going to happen? The guy was an athlete. I get that, but I mean, the fact that he was a baseball player is why it meant so much, but it's just a testament to what sports do, and sports as just an overall entity, sports in that way does for people. And I was just going to ask if anybody has any ideas, any suggestions of other moments where sport just seemed to transcend and to really become a cathartic experience, a healing experience, a unifying moment for everybody. And as I talked about it, Jim, just during all of this, one came into my head. And that was the World Series in October of 2001.
Mm.
The first game at Yankee Stadium. And President George W. Bush went out there to throw the first pitch. Obviously, just a couple of short weeks after 9/11 happened. The country was reeling. Sports ground to a halt, as did so much, you know, else in society. You know, schools were closed, airports were shut down for a few days, but basically the country was still in a state of shock, and they needed to find a way to get everything jump-started again. Nobody could possibly forget what happened, of course, it had just happened. Nobody wanted to dwell on it forever. They wanted to do something, to make a statement, to get back to normalcy, whatever you want to call it. And when they invited President Bush to throw out the first pitch there at Yankee Stadium, and then he came out, and I saw, Jim, have we talked about this before on the radio, the 30 for 30 documentary? It was a short version. It was only like a 30-minute version, not a 90-minute version of 30 for 30, about that pitch that President Bush threw and what led up to it. And there were some interviews with Paul O'Neill of the Yankees and other, you know, Yankee executives and Secret Service people talking about what it took to secure the stadium. Yankee fans and just everybody. It was a time when Democrats and Republicans didn't exist, just Americans existed, black and white, atheist and Catholic. It didn't matter what your persuasion was, no matter what your differences were, we were all the same. And he came to the mound there, and with, I don't know how many people Yankee Stadium held in 2001, 45,000, 50,000 people.
I always thought it was over 50, the old Yankee Stadium.
Yeah, maybe it was 50, 55, whatever it was.
And it was 29 yesterday, by the way. Or just, no, 28. It was 28,000 in Miami yesterday, just FYI.
Thank you. Appreciate that. But back in 2001, whatever it was, 50,000 people on their feet and just like, you know, come on. I mean, ready to explode. And when he wound up wearing a big bulletproof vest, by the way, underneath that jacket, which is why he had that Yankee jacket zipped off. Or no, I think it was a was it a NYPD? I'm trying to remember what the jacket said. Maybe it was NYPD. Maybe it was Yankees. But he had it zipped all the way up to his neck, which looked kind of weird and uncomfortable. The reason was is because they were trying to hide the bulletproof vest because we were still in that extraordinary state of security and lockdown, as you know. And he wound up from the mound. And I watched that 30 for 30, and I remember him talking, President Bush, about what Jeter told him down in the tunnel. He said, whatever you do, sir, don't bounce it. Don't bounce it. They will boo you. Even on this moment of unity and the president here in the World Series, they will boo you. He's talking about New York fans who would know him better than Jeter, right? He said, sir, whatever you do, don't bounce it. And they asked him, are you going to go in from the front of the mound like so many do or on the mound? He goes, I'm going on the mound, of course. And he wound up and threw a perfect strike. And I mean, it would have been like a high strike. It would have been around the belt area of a hitter. But that perfect strike, the explosion of emotion in that building at Yankee Stadium at that time was unlike anything I'd ever seen. And I remember it live. I was in California, but I remember watching it live in 2001. And then when I watched that 30 for 30 a couple of years ago, it just brought it all back again. There was a healing moment that sports brought there, again, where all of our differences just disappeared. It was an amazing moment. Last night had that kind of feel. Maybe not on the full national scale as the moment I just described was, because that was the World Series. It was prime time. It was New York City. It was, you know, the ratings, I can't even imagine what they were. How many millions of people were watching that and how many millions of people cheered when he threw that strike. And we said, we are back. We are not going to let them take us down. We are not going to let them stop us from doing what we do. Let's play baseball. Let's go. It was just such an amazing moment. I think last night was that on a smaller scale because it was just in Miami. And when I say just, I mean compared to World Series in New York. And it was a national tragedy. And this one was a baseball tragedy. This was a baseball tragedy. And I think D. Gordon hitting that home run for Jose Fernandez, as Matt Underwood said to us in the first hour, it was also a Cuban-American tragedy because so many Cuban-Americans looked to him as being the embodiment of them. Of all of those who were able to escape the island prison of Cuba, the communist rule, the human rights violations, being thrown in prison for the wrong thoughts, all of that sort of thing, all of those who were able to escape saw themselves in Jose Fernandez living out this amazing dream. And for that last night, that's the kind of moment it was for me. All right, I got some people who want to answer this. Let's go to Ted, who's calling from Wauseon. Ted, thanks for joining us on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. You want to talk about D. Gordon in the moment last night? Go ahead, sir.
I guess I really don't have a lot to say about D. Gordon. I didn't see it or nothing. I was too busy watching my Tigers choke one away again. But the first thing when you were asking if something like this popped into your head was when Bo Kimble shot the free throws left-handed after Tate Gathers passed away.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I don't know if that was 88-89.
Yeah, I think it was 89.
During the NCAA tournament run. That's the very first thing that popped into my mind, I guess. I'd kind of forgot about the World Series in 01.
Even because I forgot about the Bo Kimble moment. And you're right. That was a spectacular moment. I mean, Hank Gathers died on the court. How often do you see something as horrific as that, where somebody dies on the field of play in any of the major sports that we know? And then for them to honor, or for Bo Kimble in particular to honor Hank that way. And didn't he shoot left-handed free throws, or like his first free throw of the game?
His first free throw of every game.
Run?
Yeah.
Yeah.
His first free throw every game he shot left-handed.
And it just reminded everybody about this is for Hank. And anybody who's getting all jacked up and excited about the game, we don't want to forget our friend. And this is going to remind you as he shot that left-handed free throw. That is a great answer, Ted. I'm so glad.
I almost think he made some of those.
He did. Yes, he did.
But being a natural right-handed guy, you know, him, you know, the fact that you could even make one left-handed, I was...
Look, it's 1989, so that's, what, 27 years ago? So I can't swear to this. I can't remember everything from 27 years ago.
Oh, I can't either.
Ted, I don't remember him missing. I thought he made, every time he did it, I thought he made them.
Yeah, I can't recall anymore. Yeah.
I feel like
ago.
He did it, and that's what made it even that much more special and just brought, you know, so many, you know, memories and of course, tears and just floods of emotions to so many people. That's a great answer. That's a really great answer, Ted. I'm glad you called. Thank you, sir.
Yep, thanks. Bye.
Have a great day. Let me go to Patrick in Toledo. He's got another moment like this in which sports unified some people in the face of some tragic circumstances. Patrick, how are you? Patrick, Hello? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay, there we go. Good. Thanks for calling, Patrick. You got another moment like that for us. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, I do. I was at AIT for the Army during Super Bowl, during 9/11, Desert Shield, Desert Storm.
Right, right.
When Whitney Houston sang the national anthem, that has become the most memorable and for our generation national anthem in U.S. history.
It still is. To this moment, it in fact, didn't it go platinum? They released it. It was so moving.
I believe it did.
Yeah, it was so moving, not just the beauty with which she sang it, which was just, you know, I mean, incredible impossible to describe. You just have to hear it. But in addition to that, the emotion on her face, the tears, that all of that kind of came flooding out. And it was so well done live, you know, for the Super Bowl, the national anthem, that that they actually released it as a single. I think they sold it on CD, and it went platinum. People just wanted to hear the national anthem sung. You know, it's like you pop it in your CD player in your car, or now it would be your iPod or your iPhone or whatever, and people would just pop it in and listen to it because it was that beautiful.
Yeah, and also I think I remember hearing that she couldn't hear the music in her earphones because the music from the speakers was so loud.
Yeah. Yeah, so she had to essentially do that a cappella, and she had to do that while if she did hear music, it was probably competing with what she was doing in her own head. You know what I mean? Because the speakers were so loud, she might have been hearing it in what we call reverb or echo.
Right.
And she still had to try to find a way, you know, to stay on key. And it was, and you're right, that moment was a tremendously important moment, because as you said, we had just started the war. We had just gone to Kuwait in Operation Desert Storm, and of course we were sending our soldiers off to lead and fight for this country, and that unified people, because there were a lot of people who said we shouldn't go, and a lot of people questioned whether or not it was the right thing to do, but that was a moment of national pride that brought a lot of people together. I think that's a great example.
Yeah, because I remember all of us gathering in the day room when I was at AIT for the Army, and just watching it, and everybody just kind of just like, you could hear a pin drop in the room. Imagine a bunch of soldiers watching a football game, but you can hear a pin drop in the room because it was so quiet, because the beauty and the what she put into singing it. And so, like you said, that's been the most famous one.
Yeah.
To this day.
Yeah, there's no question. Other people have done beautiful renditions, too. But in fact, you know what they do? They all compare it to Whitney. They all say, wow, that might have been, you know, the best thing since Whitney. But Whitney's has always been the gold standard. It's not just because of how well she did it, but like you said, because of the circumstances in which she did it. And that's what made it so special. Thanks for the call, Patrick. Really, really great stuff there. Hey, I want to remind you again about the Buckeye Store and More. Not to make that transition the way I did, but we got to get to college football talk here with BG head coach Mike Jenks coming up in just a couple of moments. So let's get to, speaking of college football, the Buckeye Store and More, your college and pro superstore. Buckeye Store and More is where you're going to find BG gear, since we're talking about Coach Jenks. Also Rockets gear, Spartans gear, Fighting Irish, Wolverines, Baseball's Tigers, and of course, the Ohio State Buckeyes, the namesake of the store. 10% store-wide savings right now on everything at the Buckeye Store and More. Store-wide, that means anything you can wear, dress up, you can dress up in, anything you can decorate your house or your car or your office, your cubicle, your garage, your man cave, all of the Buckeye stuff you can imagine is there at the Buckeye Store and More. 10% off everything, doorbuster items at 50 to 75% off. Just get to Sylvania. You can't miss it. If you get on get out to 5700 Monroe, Starlight Plaza there, just look for Big Brutus on the roof. You can't miss him. He's right there on the roof waving you in. It's between Prometica and Ralphie's. I'm sorry, it's in front of Prometica, in between Dave's and Ralphie's there at the Starlight Plaza, 5700 Monroe in Sylvania, the Buckeye Store and More, the college and pro superstore. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick time out here. And on the way into this time out, by the way, I told you we had a sweet deal for you. Let me do this, too, before we talk to Coach Jenks. Our ticket sweet deal of the week is tickets to both haunted attractions at the Haunted Hydro in Fremont. Just log on tomorrow morning to 1065theticket.com. at 9 a.m. for a chance to get the $80 value gift certificate to Haunted Hydro for just $35. Or, like I said, you can spend $0 by being caller number 10 right now to 866-240-1065, and you'll have the shot at that $80 gift certificate package to the Haunted Hydro in Fremont. So all of that is coming up to the 10th caller, and Coach Mike Jinks talks with Jim Cushlin coming up next right here on The Ticket.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Hey, welcome back into the extravaganza. Jim Cushlin here with you. Time to talk some college football. Bowling Green Falcons style. They fell at Memphis to close out of conference play back on Saturday, 77-3. And to help us explain all things Bowling Green Falcon football, as we now switch to Mid-American Conference play, which starts Saturday back at the Deut against Eastern Michigan. We welcome in the head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons. He is Mike Jinks. Hi, Coach. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, Jim. How are you?
Not too bad. Obviously, we won't dwell on this one too much. 77-3 to close out of conference play. Memphis is a darn tough team, but they just had more of it is all I can feel I can say on this one.
Yeah, Jim, they're a good football team, but by all means, we helped them out. You know, anytime you have 9 drops and you know, who knows how many missed tackles, those things are going to happen to you. All I know is to go back to work. We definitely work on tackling enough. We catch a ton, as many balls as anybody in the country. We just got to keep these kids confident, keep their heads up, and keep them playing.
Was this just a matter of you guys not able to get much rhythm? I mean, it was 35-3 after a quarter. There were turnovers and things, as you mentioned. Was part of this just you guys were never able to get into a groove, specifically on offense?
It's kind of one of those games where everything kind of slows balls, you know. And if you look at the... You know, the first drive, you go down, we get a field goal at 7-3, we get a 3-and-out, we come back, first play of the game, coach calls a great play, we dial it up, call a slant, Canapi makes a great throw, you know, ball goes in and out of the receiver's hand, and it's almost like he hands it to him, and they go in for a 14-3 lead, we get the ball right back, ball bounces off the guy's shoulder on another perfect throw by Canapi, and next thing you know, you're down 21-3, and at that point, you know, their crowd's into it, and you're in trouble, and you're 8-9 minutes down in the first quarter. So yeah, it's one of those deals where everything kind of snowballed. But you know, football's a crazy game. We can come back and we can play our tails off this week. We have that opportunity.
Yeah, no doubt about it, Coach. Coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons joining us here on the Extravaganza. You were more or less after the game. You said, you know, you don't want your guys to be as uptight. Or I'm kind of paraphrasing on this one. What did you mean by that?
Well, I mean, the things that are happening, we've got guys running open, and we're not making plays, and I think we're pressing a little bit, you know, and it's not a matter of one guy. It's a holistic deal. You know, we're rolling guys at receiver. We're playing 8, 9, 10 guys, and I think last week everybody had a drop on a pass where they were wide open and hit it right in the numbers. You know, so it's a bunch of the young kids trying to step up and make plays for the first time. And trying to play some guys in years past that are pretty darn good at it and made those things look easy and routine. So we got to find those guys, and we'll continue to practice. We'll continue to work, and hopefully somebody will step up.
I probably asked you something very similar after the Ohio State game a couple weeks ago, Coach, but obviously with the score this lopsided, you were able to get a lot of players in some actual game action. One of those guys I'd like to like for you to talk about is backup quarterback James Morgan, a freshman. Okay performance, 17-34, 126, and an interception. Talk to me about his progression, as he's in theory one of the quarterbacks of the future for this team.
Yeah, he's definitely been coming along, and no, he'll get some. He's getting some snaps this week with the ones. You know, James is a unique kid. He made some throws last week that not too many people can make, and he also made some decisions that you'll see most freshmen make. You know, you know, he'll get some reps with the ones this week. We'll make a decision by Thursday or so. But I need to say this: the issue this year hasn't been with our quarterback play and James Kanacki, because he's done the things that he needed to do that I've seen his offense be successful in. He's made the correct reads. He's made the correct throws. We just haven't had any support around him. So it's not all on that kid. He's a competitor, but the Morgan kid does have a different skill set, and, you know, kind of like what we saw a little bit last week.
We're talking with head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jinks, here on the Extravaganza. 1-3 as we now close the book, Coach, on out-of-conference play. A couple of blowout losses, a little bit better in a loss against Middle Tennessee. Did get the home win mixed in there as well. Final thoughts on what you have seen out of your club 4 games in and through out-of-conference play?
well, we're kind of all over the place, just like everybody else is seeing. You know, we're a young group, we've had to fight through a lot of injuries, but that's college football, man. They're highs and lows, and you know, you got to be able to stay the course and stay consistent, and you got to trust in your coaches, and you got to trust in the men next to you. I can say we've done a pretty good job of doing that. Our mood yesterday at practice, I think the kids were they're disappointed. You know, they're looking for answers, but they're not pointing fingers and just ready to work, ready for the next challenge.
And that next challenge will be the opening of Mid-American Conference play, Coach, coming up on Saturday back at the Deut against Eastern Michigan. We'll have the pregame for you, 2 o'clock on Talk Radio 100.7. And how much of a mindset changes for not just the players, but you guys as a coaching staff as you switch from out-of-conference play to conference play? Because, of course, no matter how you looked, going 1-3 and out-of-conference play, technically it means nothing as far as Mid-American Conference standings are concerned.
No, we've got to get it rolling. We got to get it rolling soon. You know, the biggest deal was we got to work to win the East and get to a bowl game. You know, because those bowl games are huge. You know, that's 3 extra weeks of practice. You know, so it's huge for our program, and it starts this Saturday on homecoming at the Deut versus a very improved Eastern Michigan team. So, you know, we'll have our hands full. You know, we match up well. We just got to go out and you know, play within ourselves.
Yeah, very well said, too, on that one, Coach. This is an improved Eastern Michigan team. Most people will look at it and say, oh, it's Eastern Michigan. Big whoop. No big deal. But as you mentioned, they are a little bit improved over what they've been the last couple of years.
Yeah, they've fought some of the things that we've fought. I think the coach has done a great job of getting these guys to play the game the right way. I think they've always done that. I think they've just been undermanned a little bit. So they've got a senior heavy class that are coming in that have played a lot of football that have taken their lumps and you know, and they've kind of found a way to win. I think last week speaks volumes about what they've done as a program. You know, they play a Wildman ball club, the quarterback throws 4 picks, but the defense keeps them in the game and they give themselves to win it in the last drive. So No, those are teams that are trending in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. This is an Eastern Michigan team coming in 3-1 out of conference, wins against Wyoming at Charlotte. That's a Mountain West Conference USA, also win against a 1AA school. The loss was at Missouri at an SEC opponent, so you can't really fault them for that. But, yeah, this feels like a different Eastern Michigan team. So you guys, in many ways, will have your hands full.
No doubt. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And did a good job of making sure that our kids understood that as well. And this group's been humbled, man. They understand who they are. They understand that 15's long gone, and this is the 16th team. This is who we are. And the fact of the matter, Jim, is every game we play this year is going to be a dogfight, man. That's just the way it is, and that's got to be our mindset. You know, we don't have those guys outside that are winning right now 1-on-1. So we've got to lean on those guys up front. We've got to run the ball a little bit more, and we just got to make the routine play at the receiver position.
Talk to me about the injury front. You mentioned a few minutes ago, Coach, you've battled some injuries through the first 4 games. What's your overall status on that front?
Right now, you know, last week, Big Ben Stewart was out, and Lorenzo Tabor, a true freshman, guy's first started guard up inside, and you know, and J.J., the right guard was banged up, and then Austin Labus came in there and got some, you know, got some reps for the first time this year, and he's coming off a broken hand. You know, so hopefully in the next couple of weeks we'll get that offensive line solidified and get some of those guys that have played together throughout this stretch of the last couple of years back in there playing as a unit. And then defensively, you know, we've just had to play with those kids. You know, Alfonso Max got kind of banged up a little bit right now, and Cam Jeffries been banged up. So we're just kind of rolling those guys through there, you know, and, you know, hopefully one will step up.
We're talking with head coach of the Bowling Green Falcons, Mike Jinks, here on the Extravaganza. Up next, we switch to a Mid-American Conference play. Eastern Michigan comes into the Deut Saturday, 2 o'clock the pregame time, over on Talk Radio 100.7. And there's your programming note, folks, with the changes here at Cumulus. BG will now be on 100.7 with the occasional game right here on the ticket. So FM dial for all Bowling Green action now. And we've been kind of just talking about it a little bit, Coach. But as I look at what you guys have done in four games and come into an opponent like this who usually has been down, but they're playing better. I got to believe, Coach, a quick start and cutting down the mistakes feel to me at least like some of the biggest keys for your squad.
Oh, yeah, all of it, man. We know it's evidence that there's a confidence issue here, and then you got guys trying, guys are pressing. So we need to start fast. We need to start fast and then really tackle well on the defensive end, limit the big play, and obviously we don't want to turn the thing over.
Yeah, no doubt about that, Coach. And if you can do some of those things, chances are good you'll be able to get that first MAC victory of the season. And I know, despite everything that's happened in the first four games, Coach, to start 1-0 in the MAC, would that be the kind of thing that helps your club think better, be more positive, those kind of things? Would starting 1-0 in the MAC really help turn that page?
I tell you what, that would definitely be a shot in the arm. That's kind of what we need right now as a program. It's a big game, you know what I mean? And it'd be a big game if we were 4-0 as well. You know what I mean? It's a first conference opponent, and it's always good to start the thing off 1-0.
Absolutely well said. Coach, best of luck out there Saturday. It's Eastern Michigan coming to the Deut. 2 o'clock the pregame, 3 o'clock the kickoff on Saturday against Eastern Michigan. Mid-American Conference play begins. And, Coach, we reconvene next week. Let's hope we're talking about the 1-0 in conference play Bowling Green Falcons.
I like the sound of that. Appreciate it.
That is head coach Mike Jinks of the Bowling Green Falcons joining us here on the Extravaganza. And that's the interesting dynamic, you know, when you're at this level, the Mid-American Conference level, you know, in recent weeks, for example, just after the end, before Oklahoma and Ohio State, thinking, oh, well, Oklahoma, they're completely done, you know, if they lose this game to the Buckeyes. And of course they did. So now they're 1-2, despite somehow still being ranked. I digress. That's another story. But it's different when you're at that level, that Big Ten, Big 12, Power Conference kind of level versus a Mid-American Conference level. Bowling Green is 1-3. They were utterly blown out at Ohio State and at Memphis back on Saturday. Lost by 20, I believe it was. Let me triple check, make sure I have that number right. Yes, by 20, 41-20, went at home to Middle Tennessee. Hung on to beat North Dakota. So you're 1-3. If you were a Power Conference team, part of you would be thinking, well, that's it. Pack it in. Done. Don't even care anymore. But that's not the case at the Mid-American Conference level. You can go 1-3 as the Falcons did out of conference. Two of them on the road, two very quality opponents. One of them being Ohio State, who now sits number 2 in the nation. The other, a Memphis team that in the last couple of years has finally turned their football program around. And even though it's a mid-major conference, the American Athletic, that is a solid, solid football team, as evidenced by what they were able to do to the Falcons. But it means nothing in a way that it wouldn't if you're a Big Ten team. Okay, so you're 1-3. Things break right, and you could still be in a Mid-American Conference championship game coming up in that first Friday in December, because in truth, yes, it kind of shows where the Falcons are overall as a team right now, but it would mean nothing if Bowling Green goes out in these 8 conference games and say goes 6-2 and wins the East Division. Sure, that means that this is a team that would only be 7-5 overall, but it's still a team then that would be in a Mid-American Conference championship game playing for a conference championship. Now, it's not going to be easy, as Coach said, and he mentioned this after the post game back on Saturday in Lost Memphis, and this is kind of why I brought it up to him like that, saying these guys feel a little too uptight, and if you are, you're going to make some mistakes. There were pick sixes, there were turnovers in this game, there were just wasted opportunities early, and as Coach mentioned, it snowballed after that, and it has to in those situations for you to get a 77-3 score, especially when this was 7-3 at one point in the first quarter before the wheels just came off. But and they could turn it around, play a little looser, cut down on some of those stakes and get off to a fast start. They could very easily still take out an Eastern Michigan team who, despite being 3-1, I said this last week when this came up. Yes, they are improving, but until further notice, it's still Eastern Michigan. You're able to turn this around and get a win, and it's real important based on how the schedule goes, because after Eastern Michigan, 2 consecutive Saturdays on the road for the Falcons, 1 at Ohio, who may be one of their chief competitors in that Eastern Division, and then it's to the Glass Bowl on October 15th for a Rockets team that really looks for real, comes in undefeated as of right now. They'll play BYU coming up on Friday. They had a bye week last week, so you need to get off to that 1-0 max start before you go on the road to arguably two of the toughest opponents in conference play you'll play for the Falcons. But to sum it up once again, yes, it looked very, very awful at times in these first four games, particularly against Memphis and against Ohio State. Now, Ohio State was expected. I kind of expected Bowling Green to lose this game at Memphis because it was on the road. Memphis is solid. But my goodness, you didn't see 77-3 coming. And that's why Coach is worried that his guys might be a little uptight. But the whole long and short point of this, again, is since you're at the Mid-American Conference level, no matter how bad you looked and what the record is, it kind of doesn't matter. Because, again, if the Falcons play well over their conference schedule, which starts on Saturday against Eastern Michigan, and it goes something like 6-2, maybe beating the Ohio Bobcats next Saturday is one of those six conference wins. I'm just speaking hypothetically. Then we'll forget about 77-3 at Memphis or 77-10 at Ohio State, because you might be looking at a team that's back in a Mid-American Conference championship. That's going to do it here for this edition of the Extravaganza. Thanks so much for hanging out. Drive Time coming up next. And a little bit later, of course, the high school football forum, Bill Clark and the crew, 7 o'clock, right here on the ticket to get you all your info on high school sports. That's going to do it for us, though, here on the Extravaganza. Drive Time is next. Stick around.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.